And I invite anybody who's interested in today's topic who wants to call. The number is 503-325-0010. That's 325-0010. The topic again is, are smartphones destroying the culture? And those of you who are friends with me on Facebook saw the article that I referred to before from The Atlantic magazine that describes in alarming, disturbing detail preliminary research that's available at theatlantic.com. The title of the article is, Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation? Many more comfortable online than out partying, post-millennials are safer physically than adolescents have ever been, but they're on the brink of a mental health crisis. Maybe destroying culture, destroying a generation, a strong language, maybe it's a journalistic ploy to grab readers, but when you look into the information, the statistics, the rapidity with which our culture, our young, and people have displaced their attention, their, how shall I put it, how present they are with that work. You see pictures everywhere or scenes everywhere where people are together, but they're not together because their faces are looking down at some virtual reality or some conversation with a distant entity or even their friends. And I understand well that part of the success of the internet and Snapchat and Facebook and blogs are they create community, they create connection within a community. But it's happened so quickly. Can we be sure that there is not something being lost, something, maybe some damage being done to form the formation of young people's personalities, maybe some loss of connection on a real, physical, in time, in place way? I don't know. I don't profess to be an expert, so if you have some background in psychology or background in working with the internet, a lot of background because I probably spend an inordinate amount of time in Facebook. I too seek connection through Facebook, but I also have ulterior motives, which I are probably apparent to those who follow. Anyway, give me your call here at the station, KMUN. 503-325-0010, and hopefully we worked out the technical glitches that I had last week when the flash lights up and I hit the go button and it doesn't go. So we'll get to that. So if there's a pause, it's just because I'm still fumbling. We're working on that technical issue. So the article in The Atlantic talks about how young people are increasingly showing signs of depression at unprecedented levels. And there seem to be substituting, according to this article anyway, whose author is, who's the author? Jean M. Twenge. I believe she's a psychologist. They seem to be opting out of traditional activities like dating, like, wanting to get their license, wanting to date in the many ways that we of previous generations, pre-smartphones, used to do. And so it's kind of concerning. So this author, Jean Twenge, has been researching generational differences for 25 years. She got her doctorate in it. She says, beliefs and behaviors that were simply already rising simply continue to do so. Millennials, for instance, are a highly individualistic generation, but individualism has been increasing since the baby boomers turned on, tuned in, and dropped out. The author goes on to say that she's seen these hills and valleys in trends towards individualism. But then she writes, around 2012, I noticed abrupt shifts in teen behaviors and emotional states. The gentle slopes of the line graphs became steep mountains and sheer cliffs, and many of the distinctive characteristics of the millennial generation began to disappear. In all my analyses of generational data, some reaching back to the 1930s, I had never seen anything like it, quote. The allure of independence so powerful to previous generations holds less sway over today's teens. Maybe they don't want to leave home because they've got this sense of safety and security and that all their needs are met. And certainly I believe that families should stay together, and the idea of clan and in other cultures and ethnic cultures, staying together can certainly ensure the passage of important values and whatnot. But this is maybe something different. I don't know. So this is a conversation with John Orr, and the topic is today, are smartphones destroying our culture? And so give us a call if you have comments and things that you've seen that maybe you like or dislike. You agree or disagree with the premise in today's topic, 503-325-0010. I mean, it does seem slightly ridiculous, I suppose, to dispense with the fact that, you know, smartphones and the little computers that used to take buildings or at least large rooms that we can fit comfortably in our pocket, they let us answer so many questions. They give us fingertips access to all kinds of information and research. But that's only part of the picture, of course. So I guess just waiting for my faithful listenership here to call in and weigh in, I will just continue to share what I think are alarming observations and opinions of this author from the Atlantic Monthly. What happened in 2012 to cause such dramatic shifts in behavior? It was after the Great Recession, which officially lasted from 2007 to 2009, and had a starker effect on millennials trying to find a place in the sputtering economy. But it was exactly the moment when the proportion of Americans who owned a smartphone surpassed 50%. The more I pored over yearly surveys of teen attitudes and behaviors, the more I talked to young people, the clearer it became that theirs is a generation shaped by a smartphone and by the concomitant rise of social media. I call them iGen, born between 1995 and 2012. Members of this generation are growing up with smartphones, have an Instagram account before they start high school, and do not remember a time before the internet. The millennials grew up with the web as well, but it wasn't ever present in their lives, at hand at all times, day and night. iGen's oldest members were early adolescents when the iPhone was introduced. In 2007, and high school students when the iPad came on the scene in 2010. A 2017 survey of more than 5,000 American teens found that 3 out of 4 owned an iPhone. The advent of the smartphone and its cousin, the tablet, was quickly followed by the hand-wringing about deleterious effects of screen time. But the impact of these devices had not been fully appreciated, and goes far beyond the usual concerns about curtailed attention spans. The arrival of the smartphone has radically changed every aspect of teenagers' lives, from the nature of their social interactions to their mental health. These changes have affected young people in every corner of the nation and in every type of household. The trend appears among teens, poor and rich, of every ethnic background, cities, suburbs, and small towns. Where there are cell towers, there are teens living their lives on the cell phone or the smartphone. What do you think? Are you troubled by this? Are you troubled at the same time? Maybe you've been sucked into spending too much time with your electronic devices, dare I say, you addicted to them. What are we to make of this? Is there anything that should be done? Does it fall on the shoulders of parents? I mean, I think I read somewhere that parents are kind of struggling with this as well. So if parents are modeling this behavior or preoccupied with their smartphones and their iPads, not only maybe is there less time for family, and not only are they modeling the appropriateness of excessive screen time, maybe the job of parenting is just kind of not getting done. So we are delegating more and more, like a few years ago, some people thought too many were delegating childcare to the television. Here, watch the TV. I got work to do. Now they're just, everybody's on their phone, and you can kind of see it around. It's just, at children at a very young age, they have their phones, and maybe they're not outside playing. Maybe they're not doing sports. Maybe they're not learning musical instruments. Maybe they're less than comfortable in real face-to-face situations with the opposite sex or the sex of their preference, and are inclined to just retreat to their room. I don't know. It certainly would be interesting to hear what our listeners out there think about all of this. The topic is, are smartphones destroying the culture? And the number is 503-325-0010. Looks like we may have a caller. Once that call goes through and the second flashing light comes on. Oh, it's taking too long. I'm going to go see if this works. Hello, this is Conversation with John Orr. Are you there?
I am.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. I'm dying here. It's 20 to 9, and you're the first caller. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I saw the position you were in, and I said, well, I do have some thoughts. So.
Thanks for having mercy on the DJ here. Go ahead.
Well, I'm 74 years old, so perhaps I have a different perspective than many people. I do have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I've seen it. It's pathetic. It hasn't started just with the iPhone, however. It's been this type of thing been going on for a long, long time. And basically what it is unfortunately, at least as far as I see it, a general breakdown in society. And the TV had something to do with it. But it was... I'm getting feedback from the...
Yeah, turn your radio down.
Yeah, way down, off.
Yeah, way down or off. There you go. Does that help?
Substantially, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that brings up what just happened, something that I've noticed, and I don't believe it's Alzheimer's. I'm addicted as well, but not perhaps to the extent that I was. I back off from it because I was losing my ability to focus. This is not a good thing, and for a businessman that's been somewhat successful, you have to be goal-oriented, and you have to keep your mind on what you're doing. It seems the smallest distraction anymore can make me not be as quick. I have to think about it a little more. And I've noticed it not just in myself, but other people. And I mean other people that aren't as old as I am. And even the young, my teenage grandsons. I even see down to my 7-year-old granddaughter and 9-year-old granddaughter. I even see it down at their level now.
What exactly is it you're seeing, sir?
I'm seeing less of an ability to focus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. You think there's a correlation between that and what seems like an epidemic of ADHD and medication associated with that?
Well, ADHD to me is basically what we're talking about here. Attention deficit disorder. Yeah. Not to the point that medication would be normally necessary. But certainly enough to break down the long-term goal process. Because when you can't focus and you have to basically, I've seen it in the kids, have to make notes. Mm-hmm. They're not able to retain it the way it seems to have been people did before.
Yeah, I think you've got a point there. If your mind is, you can actually see it in other situations where two people will be talking to each other, another person will just burst upon them, and aside from etiquette issues, the attention span seems to demonstrate its absence when it switches over to the new person, the new stimuli, even though there was a conversation and development going on. I don't know if those are related phenomena, but back in the 40s and the 50s in the schools of psychology, there was a sort of bleed over from what they were teaching about perceptual psychology to advertising. And that was, if you change the images more frequently, it sends something to the brain which reignites a higher level or ignites a higher level of attention. And so this whole that may also be of a similar piece, that these constant need for new stimulation. Oh, new message. Oh, somebody likes, my post, or oh, somebody's commenting on my post. And from what I've read, there is something going on in the brain which feeds it. And one part of it is, I need to know this. And it kind of has to do with some real primitive part of the brain that maybe there's somebody behind me or something I need to check on. And the other one is just the basic idea of I want attention, I want to be liked, blah, blah, blah. And so there's a lot of sophisticated psychology behind it and manipulation. Of course, Facebook is just huge. So, I mean, what would you think parents ought to do about this?
Well, I think parents' first problem is to become parents. I don't see that parents really are, in the vast majority of cases, not every case, by any stretch of the imagination. But it's rare that I see a family together anymore.
Yeah.
Other than, they're all sitting around in a restaurant. Or you can see them in the car. The driver sees everybody looking at his iPhone. Yeah. You see them in the restaurant. Same thing. I've had it happen in my own home. Which is very upsetting to me. When your grandkids and family actually come to visit, and it's a time of the year when it's family, it's about family, it always has been about family, then and the family isn't really there anymore. I mean, they're there, but it's just, they're in place, but not in soul, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that goes back, unfortunately, to the whole problem, which is a decrease in the morals and ethics of the fiber of the society. And that's been going on for a long, long time. And please understand, you're not talking to what would normally be considered a religious person. I've probably been to more churches, more different designations of churches than anybody you've ever met in your life, because I was a baby brat. I moved 36 times my first 8 years of life.
Huh.
And Mom felt that we should go to church.
Yeah.
And frankly, it didn't make any difference what church it was. It was what happened to be convenient, because we might not get to go if we started looking around and shopping.
I hear that. I got to take another call here. I really appreciate your calling. Thank you, sir. And let's see if we still have that caller. Okay. Let's see. I guess it needs to flash up. Well, sure, I'm glad I did. It's on to maybe. There we go. Okay. Are you there?
I am.
Thanks for calling. Here. Conversation with John Orr. What's your comment?
Well, my comment is that my main concern about the devices that most of us have now that we're using carry with them certain applications, and those applications are designed and maintained and updated by a relatively small number of people. And so that group of people is determining the very way that we communicate with one another, and it restricts. And I think you were touching on this, you and your previous guest, that it kind of limits how people interact with one another. And that's a serious problem, but I'm really concerned that so few people are setting up these platforms such as Facebook and even simple things like the texting programs or the email programs. It makes us all more similar. We all respond in similar ways because we have in front of us something that sets the format by which we're going to communicate.
So let me follow that, so I'm sure I understand, and perhaps other listeners do. Is your premise and your concern that a small number of, say, technocratic elite are sort of framing the conversation and subconsciously suggesting or implementing norms of human interaction?
Yeah, that's it. And I'm not saying they have any ill intent, but it's limited. You know, it's limited to those people involved in it, and the rest of us are just accepting it. Whereas before, when you dealt just face-to-face with somebody, each person was somewhat different, and you interacted in different ways, and you learned to expand your understanding through those different kind of interactions you'd have with different sorts of people. The other thing that concerns me about it is a lot of people, myself included, use these devices for searching for all kinds of information, and it's great for some things, you know. It's really good at finding products, for example, which is really what it's probably designed to do more than anything else, is to sell stuff. But people also, like me, like to do research, and so we're looking for answers. And the problem with that is these machines or these platforms follow you, and they figure out who you are and what you like to see. And so when you do your research, tends to feed you stuff that it thinks that you're going to be receiving favorably rather than just randomly. And so I think rather than these being smartphones, they should be called dumb phones, because they're dumbing us all down. They're keeping us in our own little realm that this device decides represents who we are.
So let me just sort of maybe rephrase that. When we're doing a search, it's telling us maybe what we want to hear, kind of like people tune into the news networks, that conforms to their existing beliefs and confirms their biases. That's at work as well in search engines. Is that your premise?
Yes, it is.
That's troubling. You know, I had the thought that all this information and data, megadata, metadata that they gather up on us could be destructive to democracy and destructive to culture. And I'll give the following example. If you had an evil leader such as Adolf Hitler, and he was able to get his people to, you know, under his thumb, you know, by a protracted process of eliminating his political enemies, well, what if you had, but all you needed was a laptop to find out who your political enemies by ferreting through thousands of millions, hundreds of millions of texts and Facebook posts or blog comments? And you'd say, wow, that's an enemy. That's bona fide. You could have different categories of enemy, people that say horrible things about you, people that disagree with your ideas. And you could take your pick and say, well, you violated the law that says you're not supposed to put down the president or the emperor. And so we're going to bring you in for questioning, and we're going to see what you have to say. Are you going to repent? Now, this is America. That couldn't happen, right? But if they wanted to access data maybe the way tax records could be audited for your political enemies, then that could that could be bad.
Well, I think we see some of this. I don't really know. I have no personal experience, but places like China and other countries that do restrict how the internet is accessed, and I think they probably do track people very carefully to find out who's maybe somewhat subversive. And as far as that happening in this country, I think it's ripe for it right now. I think our current leadership at the top level in the federal system is a perfect example of an untrustworthy kind of administration that wouldn't think anything of stooping to try to surveil people and find out, maybe not to round them up and put them in a prison camp, but maybe to figure out who they are and how they think and try to combat that somehow electronically by what they're fed when they do a search, for example, or somehow disrupting their interactions with people with similar thinking, that where they want to put their heads together on things. There's so much that can be done electronically.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Look, I want to give another caller an opportunity. Thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the show.
You bet. So I guess I'm going to wait a second until my light flashes up, and then I'll hit the call and take the call. I think that's the way it works. Anyway, I'm enjoying the calls here. There we go. Conversation with John Orr. What's your comment?
Hi. Yeah, I am a mother of a 17-year-old, and just shifting gears a little bit here to make it more local and about the kids is I want to say that about 2012, he was definitely into his box activities and the phone and loved everything around that. But at the same time, he entered into the marching band program at Astoria High School.
Okay.
And I just can't say enough about how much this program has done for kids. And as I was listening to your introduction, I thought, oh, my gosh, what if we hadn't had that? Because that program, it was run by a very dynamic person, Scott Cuthbert, at the time, as well as a bunch of great staff. But they made it a very intense experience where you learned your instrument. You were expected to be very disciplined, focused, work with the team. All kinds of kids entered into it. They did trips, and it was a real social, you know, face-to-face, arm-to-arm type thing. And I'm just really grateful that the program was there, and I've never limited my kid's time on his phone or whatever, but music is his passion, and I'd say that for a lot of the kids in the program.
But let's just bring this back to today's topic a little bit. So I'm getting the possible implication, correct me if I'm wrong, that the existence of these programs is appreciated by you because it gives children an opportunity to actually do something rather than passively exist or interact in a virtual reality.
Exactly, yeah. And these are kids who wouldn't have been in sports where you might have gotten that same interaction with other kids and a feeling of accomplishment and something you did together. This program may end. And so it's almost an ad or just a gratefulness, too, that thank you to Astoria High School and all the people that were involved, Scott Cuthbert, that we had this, and I hope, you know, it will evolve into something in the future, and this message is important that they need to have alternatives that are a real-life thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. Mm-hmm. Children need alternatives from their schools and their parents, alternatives for
to
stimulation
support those,
and learning opportunities. Otherwise, they may just go into their cell phones. Maybe just anecdotally, I can get your read on this. It seems to me that fewer children are learning musical instruments. I know I touch on my program. It doesn't seem like they're learning the lyrics to Christmas songs, whether they're, you know, wintry songs or otherwise. Have you got the same observation going?
Yeah, I think now you can create really interesting music using other people's beats, and kids collaborate over their phones to create new songs.
Right.
And you can get around learning an instrument and put something out on SoundCloud or whatever and get a lot of likes and attention, but actually you haven't even played an instrument. And so that's the hard work. And I do wonder if people are going to stop kind of learning to play guitar and drums and gravitate more towards this electronic music.
Well,
I'm
going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your call. We have to wrap it up here. So have
thank
a good
you.
Day.
Interesting talk.
Okay, bye. Thank you. And thanks to all the people that called in here. This has been a conversation with John Orr. We'll be back next week with a new topic. It's Friday at 9:30 in the morning. You're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. If you missed today's broadcast, you can check it out at coastradio.org under podcasts and listen.